You have tuned in to an encore presentation of Cascadia News Now on KMRE 102.3 FM. Thanks so much for listening. And it's Cascadia News Now with your hosts, Cascadia Weekly's Tim Johnson and Dave Willingham. I'm Stephanie Contouris. Breaking news in Glacier tonight. Eyewitness Jeremy Standen reported the first hummingbird sighting of spring.
Great news to start out with.
I really wanted to find something, and I'm holding on to that hummingbird, so thank you for that report. We do have a full show tonight, all kinds of things that we'll be talking about, including Bellingham's homeless shelter, Kevin Ranker's town hall, and the big news from the Whatcom County Council. Well, let's start off with a brief update of the Whatcom Conservation District. We finally have a winner in that election, and the Whatcom Conservation District, as we've talked about many times before, is an important side governmental body that takes care of several issues in our county and our waters, and is more important than we give it credence. So, Heather Christensen, who was endorsed by the Democrats, I believe, this Sierra Club, and I'm not absolutely sure, but she won mightily, and the Whatcom Conservation District is a request ballot race, so oftentimes it's a heavily conservative weighted voting response. So the fact that Heather Christensen won with twice as many votes so far as her nearest contender is pretty amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing. And, you know, I've said this before, it doesn't bother me in the least that the Conservation District leans conservative in its outcome because it serves farmers. Serves a rural lifestyle, and that's all great. But one of the things that's happened to the Conservation District over the years is it's gotten politicized. It's gotten this sort of nasty national politics bleeding down and infecting what they're trying to do. And what they're trying to do is simply connect farmers with state resources that help them meet environmental regulations, meet health and safety regulations. And so the board of directors are just simply our representatives on a district that is trying to do things for the farmer. And you know, my hope is that this election will kind of help depoliticize something that was kind of getting a little nasty and out of control.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that my hope is that the axis can go back to, you know, who wants to do the work rather than who's endorsed them.
Yes.
Because
right.
This is a position we want competent people in who are energized and excited about the process.
Right. The other thing that was happening is some of the people that were on the and may still be on the conservation, I haven't looked in to see their makeup, but they had served on many different commissions and boards. And what that does is that tends to narrow the focus of opinion. And so if you've got one guy that's sitting on every ag board there is, then you have only that opinion serving agriculture. And you know, you'd hope that that person is wise, but if they're not wise, you're not getting a good mix of opinion on your ag boards.
Who's at the table, right? It's the
right.
Same question of every governing body that we have. It's just a little more out of sight with the Conservation District. And I think that there were some people who looked askance at the fact that she had Seattle arts connections and that she was coming from that perspective. But at the same time, I saw the Democrats push really hard. She lives in her grandfather's house, born and bred in Bellingham. So she has, or in the county, she has those connections. I always think that a multiplicity of voices and perspectives is excellent.
So. Right, and farmers themselves are becoming more diverse. They're becoming more diverse in who they serve. Organic farming has become a thing. A lot of growers in Whatcom County are now marijuana growers, and so it's not necessarily a Republican thing or a far right thing. It's actually a very broad. I would call it conservative. I would call it a conservative outlook. It's a rural outlook. You're interested in land and water and those resources, and you hope that you have good representation on these boards.
Absolutely, and I, like you say, it is conservative, and I hope we're getting back to that kind of conservative, not the movement conservative.
Right.
But I think it's an excellent point. The district, the county is changing, and we like to see governmental bodies reflect that. Speaking of governmental bodies, boy, I hear that the Whatcom County Council meeting was a hot time, as many of our councils, both city and county, have been recently. And I hear that it did not let out until around 11 o'clock just to support all the open comments. Fortunately, our correspondent Liz Darrow was there, and she talked to some people.
On Tuesday, March 21st, I attended a public hearing hosted by the Whatcom County Council to determine whether a moratorium on new permits to export unrefined fossil fuels from Cherry Point would be extended another 6 months while the county works on its comprehensive plan. The original moratorium was put in place by the council in 2016, following the defeat of the Gateway Pacific Coal Terminal. As I arrived at the courthouse, I encountered a group of about 100 people demonstrating on behalf of the Teamsters of Whatcom County.
I want everybody to go back home, and I want you to email these council members. I want you to email the executive and let him know that when they get back to the table next Monday the 21st, we want a fair proposal.
That's Rich Ewing. He's a member of Teamsters Local 231, which represents approximately half of Whatcom County employees. He told me that the Teamsters had been trying to negotiate a contract with the county since October of 2016. Rich knew that their issues weren't on the agenda for tonight's meeting, but said that the group was taking the opportunity to remind the county that they still do not have a contract.
They're offering smaller wage increases to these employees than they are to all the rest of the employees of the county. The negotiating committee evidently wasn't relaying our message adequately to the council and the executive, so we felt we better come out here ourselves and relay that message. When we get back to the table with the county next Monday, we hope to receive a fair proposal from the county's negotiator.
Inside the courthouse, I met Eddie Urey, who works with the Clean Energy Program at Resources for Sustainable Communities. He gave me some background information on the issues at Cherry Point.
So this is an extension of a moratorium from 6 months ago, and originally an emergency ordinance put in place last summer. It came as a result of a long process of working through policy updates to the county's land use code called the Comprehensive Plan, and a lot of controversy around amendments that would seek to limit new development, new uses at Cherry Point if it's for fossil fuels coming from elsewhere, not being processed at Cherry Point, but rather shipped on through for export. This is a major risk now because of the lifting of the federal ban on crude oil export, which was in place for 40 years. What we're asking the county to do is to step up and make it their policy, make it their role to make sure that what laws are in place do get enforced in the interest of protecting public health and safety, and even the existing refinery jobs and industries there, which actually could be threatened if mass-scale crude export happens.
The chamber where the county council meets was standing room only. Resources for Sustainable Communities had promoted this meeting and asked that citizens wear red t-shirts to show their support. It was clear from looking around the room that the overwhelming majority of those in attendance were in favor of the moratorium. Dozens of community members took this opportunity to speak to the council about their concerns regarding the safety of our community, protection of the Salish Sea, and the need to respect treaty rights, among other things.
Dina Jensen, Birch Bay. I want to acknowledge that this meeting is being held on land that is the traditional territory of the Lummi and Nooksack peoples. May we nurture our relationship with our Coast Salish neighbors and the shared responsibility to their homelands where we all reside today.
We need to protect our community from dangerous and destructive oil spills. We need to safeguard the treaty rights of our Lummi neighbors, who are the original residents of Whatcom County.
Good evening. My name is Ken Kalier. I live in Whatcom County, just outside the Bellingham city limits. I've come here today out of concern for the future of our magnificent community and for the legacy we will leave to our grandchildren and to their grandchildren.
There were very few people who came to the meeting to ask the county not to pass the moratorium. Chet Dow, a Whatcom County Republican, asked the county to think of those not in attendance when casting their vote.
Good evening, Council. You guys all were elected to represent the voters of Whatcom County. Each of you won your elections. I'd like to remind you to consider that there's roughly 212,000 individuals that are residents and citizens of Whatcom County, and there are about 140,000 registered voters out there. And we have, I commend my fellow citizens this evening for getting off their backsides, coming down here, and sharing their opinions with you folks. So you can weigh public policy here. I think there's one or more of you in here for sure, you sitting here on the DS, that appreciates the legal ramifications of what's going on here. This is just ludicrous. The county's exposed to the mother of all legal actions if this nonsense or this stuff continues, and the expense will fall on all the taxpayers. You're here to represent all the voters, not just the 250 people that were motivated enough to come down here. And there's lots of people that don't share the opinion of the well-spoken speakers this evening. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Chet makes an important, if hard to follow, point. The County Council chamber was filled to overflowing, mostly with people who came to show their support for the moratorium. If there's one thing our current political climate has encouraged, it is involvement on the local level. Those who care about issues impacting Whatcom County show up and speak out. This was evident in the eloquent testimony delivered by Raina Anderson, a recent Western Washington University graduate.
We only have one planet, and our resources are finite. We need to protect clean water and air for our citizens and generations to come. Researchers from the American Association for the Advancement of Science estimates 5.5 million people died in 2015 due to pollution. And that number is expected to rise with our continued and increasing dependency on fossil fuels. We cannot and must not be so dependent. It's just not sustainable, it's dangerous, and it's irresponsible. Instead, let's promote green energy jobs. These are well-paying and sustainable. I understand people are afraid of losing their jobs, and I would be too if we choose not to invest in our fellow citizens. But we could provide funding and support retraining efforts to help our citizens gain the skills necessary for this imminent transition to our economy.
In the end, the county voted 6-1 to extend the moratorium on permits to export unrefined fossil fuels from Cherry Point. This felt like a small victory in what has otherwise been a dismal political time, both locally and nationally. By the time I left the courthouse, I was a little disappointed to see that the Teamsters were gone. I wanted to tell them that we won this round, but that I understand there is so much more work to be done. For Cascadia News Now, I'm Liz Darrow.
And journalist Liz Darrow talking about the Whatcom County Council approving another six-month moratorium on permits for refined fossil fuel exports at Cherry Point, which, as Liz reported, a lot of people were happy about.
Yes, and I was pleasantly surprised that the council remains consistent on this, because their purpose in doing this hasn't changed. There's nothing that's changed about it. And you had listed a long string of words, and each one of those words is important to understand what it is that they're doing. It's a ban on new applications for unrefined fossil fuel exports. And every one of those words is important to understand this, because the moratorium doesn't stop anything actually happening. It probably doesn't really even stop a company that exists there.
I thought it was applicate. Well, you're going to unpack it for
yeah.
us. You unpack it for us, Tim.
From putting forward a proposal of their own to expand their own operations that exist there. In other words, they want to add a new product line, or they want to do something. It probably doesn't even influence that. So it actually affects nothing going on, nothing underway, but it does stop someone from slipping a permit application in under the transom while council are trying to figure out whether their land use code is sufficiently protective of the things that people in Whatcom County want it to be protective of.
And that's why they do it in six-month increments.
Yes. When you put an emergency moratorium, we shouldn't get too hung up on the word emergency. This is how it's described in state law. But if you put a ban in place because you want to stop something, nefarious. I don't know if nefarious is the right word, but something from happening, something from coming in under the transom while you're trying to do legislative work. You can put one of these in place. When you put one of them in place, it immediately draws a public hearing, which is a good thing, because the public gets to show up and say what they think, what's on their mind. But it only holds in place for 6 months, and it has to be renewed. And that's what happened this week, was they simply renewed something that had been put in place before, because they're still working on these amendments to the comprehensive plan that would, you have to think about these things as a series of tools, a set of tools that they can use when they make planning decisions that are appropriate. The economic development is an important one, but also environmental protection, a sense of the history and the purpose of Cherry Point and the role it's played historically. All of these things are important. And past comprehensive plans, they weighted them a little differently than we might weight them today. So one of the things that the council is trying to do is trying to determine whether the weighting of the various things in that toolbox are appropriate for modern planning.
I gotta say it's been really fun following the public comment process, because there are a couple of people in Whatcom County who are doing a tremendous job keeping track of the pro get rid of the moratorium, we want to do this export thing, and submitting all that they find through public comment. And it's really excellent to see people stepping up like that. You know, and it's important to remember it wasn't legal to export this unrefined stuff until like October 2015. This is a recent thing. This isn't something that has been taken away.
Yes.
And frankly, I have trouble understanding why people are stepping up. And I know there's the ad campaign through the Stand Up, and you know that are pushing it.
Clue us into what you mean by Stand Up.
So Stand Up is a campaign run by the Whatcom Business Alliance, and it's basically the idea behind the advertisements. If you've been on Facebook or Twitter or certainly other things, you've seen them, is that, you know, they want to expand the exports from Whatcom County to provide, you know, jobs and stuff. But those jobs aren't great jobs. They aren't like refinery jobs. Those, you know, working at an export facility, you get paid like half or less of what a refinery operator gets paid.
So that's, one of the correct things that was so powerful to me that in Liz's report from the feedback was the student from Western who stood up and said that this keeps being positioned as a jobs issue, but what about green jobs and what about creating green jobs? And I'm so frustrated about the ongoing jobs versus environment pitting issues that we care about against each other in a way that I think is not really upfront.
Yeah. And actually, that is the very purpose of these amendments to comprehensive plan, is to try to put these things into balance so that they don't get played off one another. And what Dave was saying earlier is exactly right, and that's why that word unrefined in that very long train of words that we use when we talk about this is an important one, because you're not refining a product. You are simply turning a valve on a pipeline and filling a ship up and sending it overseas where it gets refined somewhere else. And so there aren't a lot of jobs, and they're not great jobs. And so it's devious to try to frame it as this. But what it really, I mean, but the argument off the other side is it sends a bad message that Whatcom County isn't open for business. Well, you know, maybe Whatcom County isn't open for business for all kinds of business. And maybe there are some businesses that have reached their zenith and are going to fade in the future. Fossil fuels might be one of them. I mean, I run a newspaper. I know that newspapers are they're on the decline. That doesn't mean they're going to be over tomorrow. That doesn't mean that you won't find a paper a century from now. But newspapers are on a track of slow decline, and I believe fossil fuel use is probably on the same track.
And I think you're right about intentionality of how we envision our county and what we bring in. And we as a community have a right and a call to do that. While we're doing that on the county level, our state, do you see how I did that? Our state legislature is busy trying to do that on the budgetary level in Olympia. And how's that going, Dave?
Well, the governor released his budget months ago, and we talked about that. Just yesterday, Senate Republicans released their budget, and it's important to note at the outset, neither of those budgets are going to be enacted. These are wish lists, and you know, they're statements of intent. But I think it's a good hint. And later this week, probably when the House Democrats release their budget, it'll be kind of an indicator of what we might wind up with, but not certainly not Exactly. And to talk about it, I think it's important we need to take a little bit of a step back and talk about how state employees are paid and get raises, because about 15 years ago, the state legislature decided that instead of having the employee unions negotiate directly with the agencies they work for, they would negotiate with the state kind of as a whole. That would generate a negotiated package that the legislature would then get to vote up or down on. And this has been a problem ever since for Republicans in the legislature who feel like they want to have more control over this process. And back when it was unions negotiating with individual agencies, they got to have a little bit more say. They could say, you know, no, we're not going to fund that raise. But that process happened last year, and in it, the states, the outcome of the negotiations is that most state employees will get a 6% raise over the next 2 years. And some state employees who are in jobs that are chronically understaffed or way behind state norms will get larger raises. And a lot of state jobs have not kept up with the private sector and are still hurting from when the budget crisis happened a few years ago.
What I can just quickly interject is sort of so counterintuitive, because I think, at least for me, we assume that state jobs are well paid. I think that there's this notion in our culture that, oh, of course, oh, you got a state job. Oh, aren't you set for life?
Well, and there was a time where that was not entirely true, but the compensation was overall very good. They had very good health care and so specifically in this agreement, jobs like psychiatric nurses, psychiatric social workers, state troopers are getting larger raises. Like state troopers, it's like 19 to 23% based on their rank. Psychiatric social workers, I think, is like 50%. It's very high, but we don't have enough to cover the state. And so that happened last year, and that has now come to the legislature to vote on. And one of the top line items in the Republicans' budget proposal is to say no to almost all of that. They're approving the increases for corrections workers and state troopers, and everyone else gets $500 raise this year and $500 raise next year.
Wow.
And that's it.
And where is that in terms of the cost of living allowance? It's pretty far behind.
It's like for the average state employee, that's a sixth of what they would have gotten under the negotiated deal. And it's not keeping those jobs up to pace with private sector. And it's not, you know,
Which entails retention, and which right. What happens to retention for these needed jobs. So how does this lead into the budget stuff? I saw Kevin Ranker posted that he was also up until 11 o'clock a couple nights ago, just in the Republican budget session. So what's up with that?
So the overall Republican budget plan is a little over $43 billion. A little over half of that is education, and it includes their education plan with a slight change. We talked about it before. The overall property tax increase has gone down, but otherwise it's mostly the same. They're doing some increases, like the high-risk insurance pool is getting some more funding, and there's a little bit in some specific like corrections programs.
Tell me more about the high-risk insurance pool.
So that is a specific insurance pool for people whose health care is very expensive and that are very expensive to take care of. And that includes people who are chronically ill, people who have, you know, long-term disabilities that are heavily debilitating. And it's, you know, part of the federal Republican plan is to ultimately take a lot of the people who are on Obamacare insurance now, who are in those categories, and shift them onto state-run pools. And it's hazardous because those people are very expensive, and it's not a good long-term strategy. The reductions are kind of the big things. There's big reductions in things like the number of people who can qualify for exemptions under Work First and TAMF, which is Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, and that's, you know, the exceptions for that now are pretty grim. It's like you're 55 or older and you're caring for a child that isn't yours, or you are long-term disabled, or, you know, the way the rules are now, you have to not be able to work to cover an exemption. And I haven't, this just came out yesterday, I haven't gone too deep in the reads on that, but that's a little scary. It repeals I-1351, which is the class size reduction and teacher compensation initiative
from
a couple of years ago. It disallows certain purchases if you are on state food assistance, which I remember was a sign of tyranny.
Is this the steak thing? Is this the people on EBT can't buy steak?
This is people on EBT can't buy certain sugary products. And, you know, when New York State said, we're going to tax those things, that was a crisis. That was, you know, a government run amok. But, you know, this is, you know, poor people can't have those things. And there's a lot of other cuts like basic household goods for low-income and disabled people is being eliminated. They're cutting back post incarceration supervision for certain types of criminals.
And this is, again, just the proposed Republican budget that we still have a Democrat-proposed Republican budget, I mean, Democrat budget, and we have the governor's budget that was and so walk us through what the process might look like if there was actually going to be a resolution.
So what's going to happen in the future is the House Democrats are going to release their plan, and it's going to be, in some similar ways, kind of crazy, probably. And they're going to, you know, pass that through the House, and then the two sides are going to sit down and they're going to fight, and they're going to fight for a while. Session ends in April, I believe. The state budget crisis point is July 1st. That's when the state has to start kind of a managed shutdown process if it doesn't have a budget. So if this year is like other years, we will likely late June have a actual budget.
Yeah, and I think the thing that is frustrating watching this year after year after year is when you're into restriction of everything, reduction of everything, elimination of everything, you tend to win in these budget battles because you have when you negotiate, when one side has many things they'd like to achieve and one side has only one thing they want to achieve, that person, that side that has only one thing they want to achieve has a lot of negotiating power, and particularly as on the razor's edge as the legislature is right now. I think there's a one Democrat lead in the House and a one senator lead in the Senate, and it's very difficult to make headway when there are issues of intractability. I mean, if you had wide-scale agreement, broad agreement that ABC is important, and just how are we going to get to ABC? But we don't even have agreement in a large case that ABC are important. I mean, it's hard to move forward in that kind of paralysis.
Yeah, and it's easier, like just like you were saying, to get people riled up if you're doing something active. And so like Inslee's budget calls for a carbon tax. That automatically sets a constituency that has something to lose and they're motivated. The Republican budget is targeting, in a lot of the cuts, people who are hard to get motivated to fight back and people who really have other things to be doing.
Yeah, Tim, what you were saying there about one side, if they only need to say no and the other side's trying to move proactively, sounds like a national situation that is similar to us. And I have to use this quick opportunity to give a plug, because we don't talk about national issues, but Dave Willingham actually does. He has a new show that has debuted in the past week. It's called American Carnage Report. And he and some friends talk about national news, and he might have something to say about how the local is the national and the national is the local. And you are listening to Dave Willingham, Tim Johnson, and me, Stephanie Katouris, on Cascadia News Now. You are tuned into KMRE 102.3 FM, Bellingham, your community, your voice, your station. So I want to ask if, not to put you on the spot, but we're in this late stage of the session, the budget, well, sort of beginning stage of the budget, late stage of the session. What, if anything, can a citizen do if somebody like me, if somebody knows someone who is disabled and they're thinking, oh, so maybe they'll still have some EBT and some food stamps, oh, but they can't get basic toiletries anymore if this budget goes through. What would you suggest for citizens to do?
I would suggest being as vocal as you can, and that means specifically, you know, writing and following up with calls with your state legislators, and a lot of them are doing events locally. Find them, and many of them have offices in their communities. Find them, and if you get an opportunity, try and make an appointment with them in Olympia. You know, they're not it's easy to feel really disconnected here in the Pacific Northwest from Congress, but these folks are in our backyard, and they are available.
Yeah, I have to say, from my former life as a political activist and somebody who took people down to Olympia to lobby days and such, that it's very easy to feel disconnected or even intimidated by some of these people who have these big jobs, and you're just not connected with them. And it's also, regardless of which district you might be in, or which part of Bellingham or Whatcom County or Skagit you might live in, you may feel that your representatives don't represent you or your interests. And we'll talk about this in a minute, but when we talk about Kevin Ranker's town hall, but I can't stress enough how much it matters, even if you feel like somebody does not see eye to eye, like Tim was talking about. As I heard you say, Tim, not just people who say no, but even if there's a difference between people who are willing to work forward, even with their own vision, versus not working forward. And even if you feel like your representative does not seem to want to work forward or doesn't seem to be present in Olympia very often, that does not mean that you should not call and write and show up if you can show up at the district office, if not in Olympia. And the reason is pretty clear, again, looking at the national, because the town hall pushback for the impending ACA attempts to overturn the Health Care Act have been overwhelming, and so you can see that it can happen.
Right.
So, but we have some more local stuff to get to, and we will be right back. We're going to talk about homelessness and our state and local homeless issues right after this.
We promote sustainable communities and protect the health of Northwestern Washington's people and ecosystems using science, education, advocacy, and action. We have launched a new project called Washington Goes Solar to help homeowners and businesses learn about current incentives for home and business solar arrays. More information is available on this project and others at re-sources.org.
To Cascadia News Now with Tim Johnson, Dave Willingham, and me, Stephanie Contours. And speaking of bills, we've talked a lot about bills that lived and died, but we were about to talk about an ongoing, like Tim, you said, these issues come up every year, and there's no issue, I think, that is more pervasive and sometimes hard to overcome than statewide and local homelessness. And I think a good example in the legislature of different approaches to homelessness was that there was a Senate bill that is dead for this year, but will come back next year. And it was called Approaching Homelessness or Helping Homelessness or something like that. And in the bill What they put forward was an idea that it's unlawful for any person to camp upon any private property or even public property unless it's made for camping, which is basically people without a home are no longer allowed to sleep, and criminalizing homelessness. And so we come to this issue that is heartbreaking, but we come to it from so many different angles. And here in Bellingham, I think it's no more clear than what we are faced with, what we're trying to do to deal with it. Mayor Linville proposed a homeless shelter that is going to be a much more accessible homeless shelter and a much more permanent homeless shelter. And Tim, you want to give us an update on that?
Right. And I think Dave said this earlier in the show, and I think he said it well, which is, you know, it's easy to take things away budgetarily. It's easy to take things away from poor, weak, helpless people, you know. But really, our society demands that instead of taking things away, we step up. And we provide, and I can get into some of the reasons why it's necessary to provide. But Bellingham, the people of Bellingham a few years back passed a levy on a home levy. And some of that levy money has gone to address a lot of homeless issues. And it's been pretty successful in placing certain groups of people, most groups of people, into some kind of shelter or some kind of home, whether it's permanent or transitionary onto something else. But there's this last nugget of very, very difficult people to serve. They're not necessarily sober. They might be on drugs. They're not religious. They can be quarrelsome. Sometimes they steal. Sometimes they get in fights. Sometimes they're drunk downtown, and it's typically single adult men. It's difficult to find a place for those people because even at the Lighthouse Mission, you can't show up there drunk. They won't take you. And so the mayor, for 3 years, and intensely for the last 18 months, I would say, has been trying to find a what they call a low barrier homeless shelter, a site for one in Bellingham that would provide beds and a place for this last hard group to be. Now,
and low barrier is for people who
low barrier may not, who they, yeah. who may show up drunk,
yeah.
who may not believe in God, who may be quarrelsome, who may be on drugs. Although I'm going to stress that the shelter itself, you can't have alcohol in it. You can't bring drugs into it. You can't use drugs
but
in it.
But you yourself can be inebriated.
You can show up mm-hmm. intoxicated, and you will be admitted there, which is not the case currently anywhere, I don't think. So
I think maybe the emergency shelters. I think the emergency overnight shelters when it's snowing and it gets below a certain temperature right. for one or two nights, some years.
I thought you were going to say the emergency room, and I do think you could show up there. But so this is difficult because you can't place one of these in a neighborhood. Nobody wants one near them. Nobody certainly wants one near their children, so you can't place it near a school. You can't place it in the central business district. It's very, very difficult to site one of these. And City of Bellingham does not want to be in the business of providing services to those people. So they need to be in partnership with service providers because they don't want a new department at the city. So you have to find a location that is acceptable to this and nearby the services as well. So it's a big challenge. And there's been several meetings. There was a meeting last week by the Downtown Business Association or the Downtown Bellingham Partnership. There was a meeting at the Port of Bellingham yesterday, and as we speak right now, and there is a meeting going on at the Downtown Business Association, Downtown Merchants Association, talking about this proposal to site this new shelter down on Whatcom Waterway.
And I want to just jump in because I worked at Sean Humphrey House, which is a multiply diagnosed people who are diagnosed with AIDS and either substance use or mental health issues, but has to be both. And I worked at Women Care, our former domestic violence shelter. And one of the things that struck me, having worked at both of those places, is it's unfortunately so much easier to raise money and, more importantly, public support when it is a woman who is under attack and may be homeless or displaced because of violence, which is certainly absolutely true for many of our homeless, but it's much harder to get public support for people who, through whatever reasons, through mental health issues, substance abuse issues, that it's so challenging because I think we distance ourselves from people who are going through some of life's hardest challenges.
Right.
And you're going to tell us what happened at these meetings.
Well,
but,
and I'd follow on that. Yeah. That's what I was saying at the outset when this is a hard group to place, because if you want to know how many homeless veterans there are in Bellingham, veterans who wanted housing and wanted to work with agencies to get into housing, the number of homeless veterans in Bellingham right now is zero.
Right.
They all got placed.
Yep.
And if you're a mother with children, you can be placed. If you are a victim of domestic violence, you can get placed. If you're a teen on the streets, there's programs to. So this is the last hardest group, and they're not a group that's easy to love. We have to kind of double down, but there's two main focuses to this. The first one is that the city can't, can't rigorously enforce the law and tell people to move along if there's no place for them to freely and lawfully and legally go. And so by creating this center, then when the police tell you to leave this doorway or this foyer or this park, you have a place to go. And that allows them to maybe be a little more forceful. I don't want to say that they are forceful at all,
well,
but a little more forceful.
A little kinder, because
yes,
an officer doesn't just have to shoo somebody to please a business person, which is, they don't want people not coming into their business. But an officer isn't just shooing someone. An officer can physically take someone to a shelter, and then maybe they have a chance to be kinder about it as well.
That is true. And the police have a place to take people that need to be, that are willing to go. And and the other component is that we don't just warehouse people. We try to put them into connection with services. And when I say services, I might just mean a shower and a laundromat, a place where they could clean their clothes and clean up so that they might actually improve their life. They might actually be able to go on a job interview and successfully get a job and improve their own lives.
And Lighthouse Mission has been sort of a stopgap that has helped and kept people at least marginally fed, but they don't have showers.
Right.
And
Right. So there's an enforcement aspect to it. But there's also a humanitarian aspect to it. And all the meetings that I've gone to, I went to the downtown partnership meeting. I went to the port meeting yesterday. The community of Bellingham, the citizens of Bellingham, are extremely generous and kind, and they actually understand that this is an important thing. And not one person spoke out of school about the need for this, and got up on a high horse about anything. They all understand that this is a needed thing, but they do have concerns about the city's specific proposal to site this facility on the waterfront in a manner that may displace some of the best jobs in Bellingham. I mean, this is the blue collar heart, maritime heart of Bellingham. And if I could just take a minute to unpack what the issue is, this is a piece of property down on Roeder. It's the former Colony Wharf site that's owned by the city of Bellingham.
I don't know the Colony Wharf site.
Years ago, the city and the port kind of did a land swap, and they had a kind of a checkerboard of properties, and they consolidated them. And then the port said, we're going to take the ones north of the waterway, northwest of the waterway, and we're going to build a marine trade center. And Bellingham said, we're going to take the ones that are southeast of the waterway, and we're going to build a city.
Between C and D somewhere.
Yeah.
That's
right.
My locator. So.
And but the city retained this one piece of property. I think the main reason they retained the property is the port didn't want to pay a market value for it if they didn't have to. I mean, I understand. You got to say the port doesn't want the.
Right.
If the city's managing the property and the city has a willingness to agree to, which it readily does, the whole concept of a marine trade center, then there's no problem. But the port did retain an option to purchase the property, the first option. So in order for the city to move forward on this particular thing, they have to I have to propose it to the port and give the port an opportunity then to make a decision about it, what it wants to do. And one of the options of the port, of course, is to buy the property.
So what happened at the meeting?
Well, the Working Waterfront Coalition showed up in strength. They were magnificent. They were all a fantastic group of hardworking people. They showed up in force, and I think my takeaway from it was that they know that this is a port commission that will listen to them, because one of the guys is a builder, one of the guys is a fisherman, and the other is a businessman. I think it's a good commission in which that the Working Waterfront can trust. And there's been a very growing and interesting industry since the Georgia Pacific mill closed down, consolidation of boat builders and fishermen and hull designers and engine diesel work, and it's all clustering in that one location. And it's really the only place they can be, because they're foreclosed on one end by the Bellwether complex, and then they're foreclosed on the other end by the idea that, you know, we would like to have a public waterfront, a clean and public waterfront front with parks and possibly development is in part of our waterfront district. And so there's a very narrow and small segment of water-dependent property, of water access property that these businesses need. And they can't move out to, out to Custer or something like that. They need access to a marine environment. And so they were very concerned that this proposal would not only move five businesses out. The port is willing to look at relocating those businesses within the Marine Train Center itself, not only move them out, but possibly disrupt this burgeoning industry that Bellingham has. It's actually, I think,
For this one center.
Yeah, I think somebody had said yesterday at the meeting that they did a study and about 8% of the jobs in Whatcom County are marine-related industry.
Wow. So there was a little bit of pushback then.
There was a little bit of pushback. The commissioners themselves decided they weren't going to tackle it today. They were going to try to sit down with the city and work with the city. And possibly you get a big group of people with lots of creative power, mm-hmm. and maybe they can find a solution to this. It's an interesting situation where nobody's in disagreement with the overall goal. It's just the specific siting. That is an issue right at the moment.
So what happens now? So the mayor has a lot of different voices to work with. So
yes.
What happens with the mayor's office?
Well,
now?
You know, Mayor Linville usually controls the environment pretty well, and when she's the mayor of Bellingham. But yesterday she was a guest at the port, and she took a lot of heat. She took it well. I mean, she's a strong
lady. Did she
speak?
Yeah,
she did. And she took questions from the people, and it was a polite meeting. People were passionate, but they were polite. She took their questions. She addressed things head on, mm-hmm. Not always to the satisfaction of everyone. But, you know, I have to give her credit for, you know, standing and delivering. She's a tough lady.
You know, as progressive as Bellingham likes to think it is, it is a tough city to be a mayor for on occasion. So we have one or two more issues that we are going to try to get to. And one of the things Tim Johnson and I were both lucky and happy to go to the Senator Kevin Ranker Town Hall. And so was our intrepid journalist Brooks Collins. And he talked to some folks about why they were there.
Lisa Van Doren. I'm a member of the Riveters Collective, which is a local group that's dedicated to progressive change. We're about connecting people that want change to happen with others that have the same concerns. It helps us to be talking to each other, taking concrete action for change, and you don't feel so hopeless.
My name is Tara Nelson. I'm chair of the 40th District Democrats, and I'm here volunteering. Definitely protest is a component of action that is important, but I think we also need to be doing the groundwork. You know, I really think we're losing a lot of opportunity when we're fighting amongst each other, because I think most of us have the same core values, equal rights, social justice, you know, women's control of their own bodies, and reproductive health care, and health care. I would just, encourage people to find a way to plug in that works for them. You know, you got to take care of yourself and find what works for you.
Yeah, Timothy Belew, chairman for the Lummi Nation. A few weeks back, Senator Ranker called and said that he wanted to provide the community a presentation that he gave out on Orcas Island and asked if we'd help host the event. And with the current state of affairs, we knew that we wanted to be a part of this call to action. For Lummi people and for Native people in general, you know, we're part of an ongoing relationship with the United States of America. We've made a policy decision to join our communities and cede some of our land to make sure that our way of life continues on. That takes a lot of faith and hope. Every once in a while, we have to encourage the community to take certain action. We see this event as a start of that.
And you're listening to Cascadia News Now with Tim Johnson, Dave Willingham, and I am Stephanie Contours. And that report was brought to us by Brooks Collins. I'm just going to take a quick moment. Thank you so much to Brooks Collins and Liz Darrow, who were our citizen journalists this week. And if you have been listening to us consistently, you might notice that we are upping our game and including multiple voices, or trying to include multiple voices. We have gone to an hour format, which gives us a little bit more time, even though there's a lot to discuss, but it gives us a little more time to feature voices from people in the community. And Liz Darrow and Brooks Collins have both stepped up to do that. And so part of what we're doing is experimenting with the boundary and the gray area between being a journalist and being a citizen who participates in the event or the news. And I also want to invite you, if you're listening, if you're passionate about something, if you're going to be attending a rally or a protest or a town hall meeting or anything like that, that you are welcome to contact us and be a citizen journalist yourself. The way to do that on Facebook, you can look up Cascadia News Now, or you can email us at kmre@sparkmuseum.org. That's kmre@sparkmuseum.org. And thank you so much to our first citizen journalists for branching out and taking that step. So the Kevin Ranker Town Hall started in Orcas. He had one in Orcas. This one in Bellingham, I think this one only. He had an introduction with Chairman Tim Belew from the Lummi Nation. And really a powerful presentation. What did you think, Tim?
Yeah, I thought it was too. I mean, just to take a step back, you know, Doug Erickson had his town hall a week or so back, and then this was Kevin Ranker's version of one, although it wasn't designed in the typical town hall format. And it's interesting the different approaches between the two senators, the senator of the 42nd district and the senator of the 40th district. And Kevin's goal was much more in the line of there's a lot of people who live in the 40th district, and it's a very liberal district, very progressive district, and they feel a lot of despair. And we've talked about that despair on this show. And Kevin decided, Senator decided to really directly address that and give people, you know, reasons why they should feel some despair, but also tools by which they can address and move forward with some hope. And we talked earlier in the show today about, you know, how do people get involved? And he was great about actually talking about the kinds of things that work when you want to reach out to your representative. He said, you know, don't sign a form letter. Write me a real letter. Because when I get a real letter, I read it. And he said that basically everybody who is responsible to voters needs to connect and understand voters. And so you might think that your voice is not heard, but you're wrong. It is heard.
Yeah, absolutely. So some really powerful stuff. Senator Ranker has a really unique ability to emote compassionately and to really be just caring. Like he evinces an ability to care. And one of the things I have to also talk about, how he started both of his Orcas and his Bellingham town halls with a story about the LGBTQ lobby day and a mother and daughter. And I'm not going to tell you the story. You should hear it. But that he brought this mother and daughter who have become trans activists because the daughter is in school and she's trans identified and in Tacoma, and they have started a whole project of just teaching kindness and connecting people in the Tacoma school system. That it's really unique to see that in representatives. It's not completely fair to typify this as a town hall because it really is a presentation, and he's right. Put that as out as this is his response to what's happening nationally and locally. This is a presentation on hope and change, that's what he calls it. And the one in Bellingham was co-sponsored by the Riveters Collective, which came about after the election. You heard Lisa Van Doren from that collective, and you can get in touch with them at riveterscollective.org. I think we are going to be hearing more from them in Bellingham and in that show. But Senator Ranker is going to be in Mount Vernon and also at the Moore Theater with the same presentation, and you can find it online. I really encourage you to listen yourself.
Yeah, I didn't go, but I watched the online presentation, and it is fantastic. And it's the sort of thing, watching it, I couldn't imagine anyone else in Washington state politics giving that same presentation.
Yeah.
With that energy, with that emotion, it was really impressive to see him step up and really just give it all. It was, you know, I know presentation, town hall, whatever, it was a rally.
Right, it was. And you know, these are issues that are very personal to Senator Ranker. His father is a gay man and was able to marry the person that he loves because of a marriage equality in Washington. And he's very fierce that we cannot go back on these particular things. He's a very fierce representative, very fierce champion of these. And you're right, I can't really imagine anybody delivering quite that level of a presentation, any other person in Washington, and we're fortunate to have that kind of passion in public office.
And I knew, as an equal marriage activist and a domestic partnership activist in Bellingham and Whatcom for years, I knew about his two dads. I did not know one of them was an immigrant, and that was the first time I'd heard one of his dads is from Pakistan.
Correct.
How he feels a whole different connection. And so, yeah, thanks so much. He also told us that we could adopt him in the 42nd, those of us who live there. We just have like a minute and a half. I really want to touch on what happened with Peace Health, because we are losing some jobs in our county because of it. And Tim, do you want to give us a heads up?
Well, it's a complicated story, and it's not just Bellingham. It's a regional decision on the part of Peace Health to farm out their laboratory services, and they're doing that in a number of other areas of healthcare, and it's distressing to a lot of people, mostly because Peace Health was very aggressive over the past decade of grabbing these businesses, bringing them into their fold, consolidating them, essentially creating a monopoly, and now that they have the monopoly, now they're going to farm it out. It's very distressing.
So what they've done is they have privatized their laboratory. And so that equals the loss of how many jobs?
I think they were talking about 100.
Okay.
100. And these are excellent jobs. These are laboratory
good jobs.
Right. And so my heart goes out to everyone who is impacted by that. And we wanted to give them a mention. And that, unfortunately, is all the time we have for Cascadia News Now. Huge thanks to my hosts, Cascadia Weekly's Tim Johnson and Dave Willingham. And a huge thank you to our brand new engineer, Devlin Sweeney. Yay! Thank you, Devlin. A big thanks also to reports from our citizen journalists, Liz Darrow and Brooks Collins. Appreciate all of your hard work. And Cascadia News Now is produced by me, Stephanie Contouris. Our technical director is Dave Willingham. And tune in next week for a jam-packed issue again or edition of Cascadia News Now on KMRE Bellingham, KMRE.org, and 102.3 FM Bellingham.